So we just finished completed a 4-week series and book study on the book In the Flow of Life by Eric Butterworth. And so we come out of that really realizing and recognizing really to be in the flow means to be in the experience of that divine presence unfolding itself and expressing itself through us, in our lives and to us and through us and out from us. And that infinite presence expresses as a boundless good. So to be in the flow means to embody and to share and to receive an abundance of good of every sort. And so that might mean to be in the flow then might mean to be in the flow of creative ideas or of opportunities or of financial good or of health or of peace. It might mean giving and receiving love. It might mean feeling connected to the people that you love in your life and feeling connected to everyone and everything. All of those are having an experience of being in the flow of life. It is to feel as if you have enough and to feel satisfied and to feel at ease. And so somebody said to me this week, after listening to these talks for 4 weeks and doing the book study and all that stuff, it feels so good to be in the flow. But how do you stay in the flow when people in your life, especially people that you're close to in your life, are not in the flow? In fact, they are very much out of the flow. How do you keep your thoughts and your feelings centered and anchored when people who are close to you are struggling? Someone said to me, just don't listen to those people if they're positive, if they're not positive. And so that's what I'm talking about today. And it's a challenging subject. It's a complex subject because we want to know when someone is having a hard time. And usually when someone is out of the flow, they do a lot of complaining about how awful things are, about what a rotten day they're having, about how hard things are, how things are unfair. You know, you've all experienced people talking about that stuff. And so when they're doing that, we want to know what to do and how to respond while we stay centered, while we stay centered in remembering and knowing that we live in that infinite presence of good and that its nature is to express itself in us and through us and as our very lives. We want to be able to be with them and at the same time remember and be anchored in that knowing that there is only one presence and one power in this universe and that it is a power of good and a power for good and that that is the only presence and the only power that exists. We want to know that that absolute creative principle of the universe is right where we are and that infinite good fills our lives, that it's at the center of our lives and it's the center of everyone's lives. We want to be able to remember that. And so I think there are two problems. I think one of the problems is we don't know what to say and we don't know what to do because nobody likes being preached at, really. Nobody likes somebody being the expert and telling them what to do. And I think the second problem is we think that if we listen to their moaning, which is usually what they're doing, and it seems like they're drowning, that somehow they're going to pull us underneath the water with them. Can you relate to that? Does that seem like that's what's going on? We think that if we are with someone who's having a hard time, that we either, one, have to commiserate with them, and then we get that muck all over us, too, or we think we have to fix them. And the good news is we don't have to do either. Neither one of those are our jobs. So how do you stay true to what you know inside here and still be with them when they're having a hard time? How do you stay true to what you know in here, the truth with the capital T, and still be in the world? My answer, the big answer is love them. Hence the title of my talk today is Love the One You're With. Love them. Ernest Holmes says, love is the very reason for our being. Love them. And so if you can love them, and if you can actually feel the love inside of you, which means to stop and feel your love for them, what happens then is you breathe. And what happens when you breathe then is you get out of your head and you get into your body and you become present in the moment with them. Because that fear of, oh my God, they're going to suck me down into the hole, is in your head and it's thinking about the future. It's not being in that moment with them. If you can feel your love and breathe and then become present with them and love them, what happens is the fear dissipates. The fear doesn't exist in that moment. And so in your love, what happens is your heart softens and you become compassionate and you become a hand to hold and you are side by side, no longer the expert over them that is giving them some information, and you simply become a fellow traveler on this path of life with them. Then you don't have to fix anything. You're just the fellow traveler. In Corinthians 13, 1 and 2, it says, I may speak in the languages of humans and of angels, but if I don't have love, I'm a loud gong or a clashing cymbal. I may have the gift to speak what God has revealed, and I may understand all mysteries and have all knowledge. I may even have enough faith to move mountains. But if I don't have love, I am nothing. We are called to be the presence of love. That is this spiritual path. And so what you can do when you're with that person, they're having a hard time, is to ask yourself. You get centered in that love and then ask yourself, how am I being called to love in this situation? How am I being called to love right here, right now, with this person? And so let's say it's a homeless person that you've come across, someone who's asking for money, or even if it's a friend who is out of work, and you stop and ask yourself, how am I being called to love here? Maybe you're being called to buy them groceries. Maybe you're being called to take this person out to lunch. Maybe you're being called to give them money. If it's a coworker who's having a hard time and you ask yourself, how am I being called to love? Maybe you're being called to lend a hand or to lend an ear or to give a hug. Maybe you're there to offer a book that you've just read that might help them or to bring them to church or to send them to our website so they can listen to the talks for the past month about being in the flow. And maybe if it's a friend who's having a hard time, you're being called to be that place of compassion and to say to them, I know you're having a really hard time right now. This is hard for you. I see that. And what I know also is that nothing is permanent. Did you learn that in this book? Nothing is permanent. And what I know also is that you have every single thing within you to figure this out and to get through this and to get to the other side of it. And you listen. And then perhaps you say, so why don't you tell me what you're grateful for that you have in your life right now? Because you know that when you shift into gratitude, it shifts the energy and it sets a new cause in motion and brings something new forward in their life. So you see, there was no teaching, there was no lesson, there was no giving them a hard time, there was no making them wrong. There is loving and listening and letting them share and being compassionate and then maybe sharing an idea that you have. Maybe it's asking them if they'd like you to pray with them. But it's listening from your heart. And the thing to remember when you are having a conversation with that person is if they are having an experience of not being in the flow, that not being in the flow is not in principle. It doesn't mean that there is a lack of any sort in principle. There is no lack in ultimate reality. There is a lack in their experience. So that doesn't mean that it's not available. And so let me give you an example. Say that you're with one of your friends who is complaining because she never has successful relationships. And she starts saying to you, there are no good men out there. That is lack thinking, right? The truth is, it's not that there are no good men out there. In truth, There are lots of good men out there, just like there are lots of good women out there. It's not lacking in principle. It's not that there aren't enough good men in principle. It's that there is something blocking that experience from flowing to her. But the block is in her, not in principle. Do you get that? And so say, maybe there could be a million reasons why that flow is being blocked. Maybe it's because she needs to learn to love herself first. Maybe it's because she needs to learn how to ask for what it is that she wants. Maybe it is because her soul is calling her to know her own power or her own strength or her own capability first before she gets into a relationship. There could be lots of things blocking that flow. It could be that she doesn't think that she's deserving. It could be lots of reasons. She doesn't think she's capable. She doesn't know how to have boundaries. But the thing is, there's something seeking within her to come forward and to be born and to be made real and to become alive that is blocking the flow. There's no lack in the infinite. There's no lack of ideas. There's no lack of opportunities. There's no lack of money. There's no lack of love or friends or intelligence or guidance. There's no lack in the infinite. It's a block in the flow that's happening. Here's the big key. Every single experience that any of us have, every single seeming blockage is always there to discover something greater about ourselves. It is always to discover something greater about ourselves and to give birth to something more, to discover that more and bring it forward in our lives. It is that more seeking to be made real through that person. That's what's going on. And so we remind ourselves of that when we're having a conversation with that person. There's no lack in reality. There's just a block in the flow. And that block is because something is seeking to be made known here. That's all. And so in the early days of religious science, when I started religious science, like in the 90s, there was a habit that people sometimes had of when someone was not experiencing the flow, say they were sick, or say they lost their job or crashed their car or whatever happened, people would say, well, what's in your consciousness that created that? And people would feel guilty. And people would feel like they were doing something wrong. And people would not want to come to church. Can you imagine that? The truth is, there is not something in their consciousness that created that. There is something not yet in their consciousness that creates the solution to that. Do you get the difference? There is something greater seeking to be discovered. There is something greater seeking to be given way to through them in their life. And so we can let go of the judgment. There's no judgment. This is their path and their unfolding and their self-discovery. And so I have a story that I'd like to share with you that I read this week. It goes like this. Precisely 3 years ago, I was fired from my job. Sorry, laid off. No, it was really like the first time I was fired. I'm brought into a conference room with the shades drawn and told that the company no longer needs my services, that my position is being eliminated, and that my tenure expires today. I cry. In memory, I softly weep. But in reality, I wail. Two people sit uncomfortably as tears sputter down my face and my head droops as I try to process what's happening. It's over. After I escape the airless room, I flee to my desk, head down, avoiding eye contact with everyone in the office. I will myself to be invisible long enough to gather my bag, my pride, and make it to street level. In the lobby, I run into my first friend at the company. Ram my head into his shoulder, shake and sob as he wraps his arms around my slumped body. After a few beats, I feel his grip loosen, and I know it's time to go. The sharp March air slams my face as I exit the building, taking one more glance at the place. And then, much to my surprise, I feel relieved. I'm free. I learned a lot of things from this job, about how great humans can be, about my professional strengths and weaknesses. But above all, this job showed me what I've always known in my heart to be true, that I was meant to write. And on the flip side, not meant to be doing what I was doing. It also taught me the meaning of freedom. Did I hate my job? You bet. Was I going to leave before I found another job? Not a chance. Along with 1 month's severance, I was given the invaluable gift of doing whatever the heck I wanted. Pat Scott, who just retired. For a while there, I was scared to death. I couldn't believe that I had the audacity to think that someone would actually pay me minted money to string words together and to tell stories. Journalism school felt like another lifetime, and in many ways it was. Now, the job I was fired from precisely 3 years ago, she's writing this from it happened 3 years ago, today feels like another lifetime. In the hours after I slipped out of the office for good and dragged my limp body back to my apartment, a coworker emailed me to say how sad she was about my departure. She also told me that I was, quote, so talented and kind and capable. I think she was right about that, even if my true ambition had not yet been revealed then. Once my body surrendered the memory of what was, I began to imagine what could be. So you can never predict when you'll be forced into freedom and something better. You'll never quite know when you'll be forced out of what isn't quite right. And when you are, I've learned you no longer feel like a captive. Her name is Marissa Cabas, and she is a very successful freelance writer today who is published in all sorts of magazines and newspapers. She knew in her heart that there was something more, and she was forced by life to embrace that more that had been calling her name. But when someone is stuck, when someone is not in the flow, that's exactly what's happening in their life. It's the opportunity to answer that call of their own soul to be that more that they're longing to be. And so at Centers for Spiritual Living, we have a vision statement that's called the Global Heart. And part of it says, we see Centers for Spiritual Living as a global community of inspired individuals caring for and about each other and the entire planetary family, thereby bringing the gift of active compassion and kindness to the world. That is what we are doing. That is a large part of our spiritual path, bringing kindness and compassion into the world. And that is precisely how Centers for Spiritual Living has evolved and is evolving, that this is something core to our organization and to what is important to us, to bring kindness and compassion into the world. And so if someone is showing up in your life who's having a hard time, or if someone who's showing up in your life who's having a good time, it is part of their path and it is part of your path. Them showing up in your life is part of your path because there's something in it for you as well to discover and to give way to the something more. So it's in your life on purpose also. And so the second thing that you can do to stay centered is to know that in the midst of what's happening, nothing's wrong. When things are difficult or challenging or uncomfortable, we want to name them bad. We want to call them bad and name them wrong. Uncomfortable isn't bad and isn't wrong. It's just like giving birth. There are pains that happen in the midst of it. So when we quit calling it bad or wrong, we can see then that it's an opportunity for them to get the more. It's an opportunity for us to get something more. It's an opportunity for everyone around them to get the something more, whatever that is for them in that moment. And for them, if they're lacking money, it might be that it is an opportunity for them to switch jobs, like that story, to find something that is more fitting. If it's what somebody that you know who's having a hard time because they don't have enough friends, maybe it's an opportunity for them to learn how to be a good friend. If somebody doesn't have enough time and they're complaining, maybe it's an opportunity for them to learn to say no or to learn to have better boundaries. And maybe it's always an opportunity for you to be the place of compassion and of love and to come from your spirit when you're with them. And so I'm reading two different books right now that I'm loving, both of these books. And one of them is called Jesus Through Pagan Eyes. And it is a book that talks about Jesus from three different perspectives. One is Jesus, the man of history, who he was and what he did and really what his ministry looked like and what he did while he was in the world. The second part is about the mythological Jesus. That is the Jesus that the church requires its adherents to believe in, like that Jesus died to save you from your sins. It's not what he did in his life. It's a mythology that has been created, and that is what the church is often based on. And the third aspect of the book is about the cosmic Christ, or Christ consciousness. And that is about a principle of oneness with the divine. And that's what we teach here, that Christ consciousness is within everybody. And so that Jesus of history is so fascinating to me. I don't have a whole lot of experience with that. Talking about his life and his teachings and what he did, his entire ministry and life was all about inclusion and compassion. It was all about love and acceptance. And no one was left on the outside. You know, you've heard the stories about him dining with prostitutes and beggars and people that were on the outside and unacceptable. Nobody was on the outside. Everyone was brought in. He was the great example for us of how to live our lives, from that place of love and compassion and embracing. And that second book that I'm reading is by Father Boyle, and it's called Barking to the Choir. His ministry is exactly what Jesus was doing, the man of history. And if you don't know, he started many years ago an organization called Homeboy Industries. And it is a program for at-risk, high-risk youth and former gang members and those who have recently been incarcerated. And they come to his program and get to work at Homeboy Industries, many different facets now. So they get job training, and they get assistance in seeking employment, get to take classes and go to counseling. They have tattoo removal, all of that in a safe and a supportive and an embracing environment. No one is left out. That Father Boyle is accepting and loving and compassionate and encouraging to all of them. He tells stories about some of the terrible things they do. There's never punishment or shame. It's always witnessing the light and inviting it forward, witnessing that something greater and bringing it forward. So he is living that example of Jesus. And so one of the quotes that Father Boyle says in his book, I love this, is a loving heart doesn't color the world like rose-colored glasses. It alters it. A loving heart doesn't color the world like rose-colored glasses. It alters it. Our love alters what is going on with the people in our life. And in that book, Jesus Through Pagan Eyes, Reverend Mark Townsend says, Jesus taught that unadorned compassion is the kingdom made manifest. We are here to make the kingdom manifest here and now. Our job is to make the kingdom manifest. And we do that by our love and by our compassion and by our inclusivity and by being our own Christ consciousness, that consciousness of oneness, that consciousness of knowing that we are never separate or apart or outside of that one infinite presence that is a presence of creativity and love and wisdom and guidance and knowing and infinite good. That's the Christ consciousness, to know there's no separation. And in that Christ consciousness, not only is that the truth about us, but it's the truth about the person who's experiencing the lack of flow in their life. To know that for them is like us seeing each other and seeing that God presence in each other, inviting it forward. It invites it forward for that person when you see that for them as well. Compassion is also at the heart of Buddha's teachings. And it is said that Buddha was asked by his personal attendant, Ananda, would it be true to say that the cultivation of loving kindness and compassion is part of our practice? And the Buddha replied, no. It would not be true to say that the cultivation of loving kindness and compassion is part of our practice. It would be true to say that the cultivation of loving kindness and compassion is all of our practice. And so we, here, we believe in God, and we believe in ourselves, and we believe in our fellow human beings, and we come from love while we're doing that. That is how we act as a healing presence in this planet. And so my recap for you, love is always the answer, regardless of what the question is. Love the person who is before you who is not having an experience of flow in their life. Be the presence of love. Feel your love for them. Know that there is nothing wrong with what's going on in that person's life, but instead that there is just simply something more for them to discover, something more to give way to. And be that consciousness of truth for them. That's like allowing them to touch the hem of the garment. Be the consciousness of truth, knowing that God is at the center of their life, that infinite potential is at the center of their life, and the very essence of who they are. Know that that infinite is at the center of your life, and at the center of their life, and at the center of all life. And so, blessings to all of you on this path of awakening and this path of remembering and this path of bringing that presence into this world in such a beautiful way and making the kingdom real right where you are standing. Blessings to all of you. And so I invite you to join me in an affirmative prayer. Oh, and so we take our attention from this world of effect and turn it to that infinite and boundless realm of the divine, that invisible realm that we live and move and have our being within, that infinite realm that is everywhere present, that is a presence of boundless good, that is a presence of absolute creativity and beauty and magnificence and limitlessness, overflowing, pouring itself out everywhere. This is the kingdom. And this is the kingdom that we live in at this moment. And this is the kingdom that is ever present. We live at the center of that very presence, and it lives at the very center of our beingness. And so today I simply recognize that we walk in that light of the divine, that we walk as that light of the divine, that we bring it with us everywhere we go in everything that we do. And today that presence is having its way within us in a way that is so fantastic and that is so miraculous and that is so much greater and bigger and more profound and more opulent than ever before. how good it is to walk in this presence, how good it is to commune with this one and to be in this place of truth, how good it is to be living this life of the divine. And so I claim and know and see and witness right now that our every need is being met, for we are absolutely in the flow. That flow is flowing into us and through us and out from us in this continuous flow. For this is the nature of life. This is the nature of being. And so I claim that for each of us. Health and wholeness and financial abundance and creativity and opportunities and love and friends and everything that our heart desires. For it is God's good pleasure to give us the kingdom, and that kingdom is here and now. And so we accept that to be the truth. And in our acceptance and in our knowing, something in our life shifts and something new is happening. And so that is the truth today. And so it is with a grateful heart that I release this prayer into that infinite law of the universe, knowing that it is done as it is spoken. It is done as it is embraced. It is done as it is embodied. And so today we embody this truth, stepping back more fully into the light of the divine and the light that we are. And so I release this prayer and I let it be. And so it is.